You are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay was originally aired on May 15th, 1987.
Just the other day, my wife and I were admiring the old reprobate maiden blush apple tree that stands in our backyard. It was just covered with blooms. And she was noting the bees going back and forth and saying, "Well, we're going to have a lot of apples this year." As I gazed at the tree, I couldn't help speculating about just where those bees were going and taking that honey. You know, we usually think of the honeybee as a domesticated insect, not realizing that many wild colonies exist throughout the United States and southern Canada. The honeybee is not a native, however. It was introduced to New England early in the 17th century. And maybe those stories you read about the Native Americans smoking out the bees to obtain the luscious combs or vying with black bears for a favorite bee tree might be suspect, or at least they represent a more recent history than we normally think of it. They might also indicate that the honeybee spread westward faster than the pioneer did. The honeybee is one of the most important of insects. The value of honey and beeswax produced in the United States is said to exceed $50 million annually. The bee's importance as a pollinator of valuable plants is incalculable. The honeybee is a social insect, one of the most interesting. The community of the hive is often compared to a human sovereign state with a matriarchal ruler, the queen. I'm not sure about this analogy. By many standards, a queen might be looked at as a captive, even a pampered slave. The society seems to be ruled by its own instinctual responses to changes in the makeup of the population of the hive and of the food supply. The queen is, however, a special member of the colony, and whether she rules or not, its most important permanent component. The queen may live a decade, the worker a month and a half. That the queen is different is evident from the time she hatches from the egg. While all bees are fed royal jelly, that's a glandular secretion from the mouth of the worker, for a few days after hatching but the queen is fed royal jelly throughout her larval life. At impupation time, she's sealed in a special cell and emerges to begin her secluded life as an egg-laying machine. She may lay 1,000 or more eggs daily, a prodigious task requiring enormous amounts of energy, and therefore large amounts of nourishment. This she receives from the worker in the form of especially rich predigested food. About the only independent action the queen undertakes is the nuptial flight, during which the young queen is fertilized for life. Obviously, this has to happen soon after she emerges from her pupal cell. She may also defend the colony or herself against rival queens. The worker is a female which has been fed honey and bee bread after the first few days of her life. The worker, often thought of as an impressed slave, actually leads a more varied life than the queen. Early in life, she produces royal jelly and is therefore a feeder and a tender of the very young and of the queen. Beeswax is produced by special abdominal glands which develop later, and the worker may then change its activity to hive and cell building. When the wax secreting stage is over, the worker becomes a forager for honey and pollen. Foraging, of course, is important to the colony, and it's of interest that the attention of the forager, and therefore the nature of the honey it produces, is focused on a specific flower while they're in their prime. While apples are in bloom, a certain portion of the hive concentrates on apple blossoms. As long as the apple nectar is abundant, these bees make repeated trips from tree to hive. When the apple nectaries begin to dry up, these workers often quiet down until a new and abundant source of nectar is found. When a foraging worker discovers a new source of nectar, she returns to the hive and performs a special dance to get the attention of the other workers and to inform them of the location and amount of the source. They cluster around her, their antennae directed toward her, apparently to pick up the lingering scent of the flower in her body. After absorbing the message, they sally forth to locate the new nectar source. Then they tend to concentrate on this species of flower until its nectaries dry up. This tendency to concentrate on one species could be very important in the pollination of plants. The male, or drone, is produced from an unfertilized egg. He is stingless, and his only function appears to be the fertilization of the queen. When this is accomplished during the nuptial flight, the drone is castrated and allowed to starve. All of these behavioral patterns appear to have evolved as a result of tens of centuries of successful hive life. Whether you consider the hive to be a colony, a sovereign state, or a superorganism, you'll have to admit it's an interesting state of being. That's all I have for this week. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.